Good morning, everyone. Welcome to St. Stephen's Green Unitarian Church. Welcome to everyone, whether you are here with us today in person or watching on our webcam, I hope it is on, or maybe you're listening to us through the recordings page on our website. Every Sunday, the service is uploaded to our website on the recordings page. And to those of you visiting for the very first time, we hope you experience the warmth and openness of our community. You are welcome. So our opening words are from Patricia Adams Farmer, and it encapsulates the theme of today's service. The world is like a great spider web, with or without the spider, or perhaps including the spider, and I am afraid of spiders, because even the tiniest of creatures are card-carrying members of our silky, web-like world. This lacy, cosmic extravagance in which we all find ourselves can be explained with elaborate cosmological or scientific models. But the spider web is all we need to stir our imagination. As a theologian, I believe the spider web is the perfect image for understanding process theology, a spiritual path built on the idea of a web-like universe where every small gesture of kindness sets the whole world a tremble. The silken threads that connect us are awash with possibility after possibility for tremors of love and beauty to ripple across the universe. In this great web, so delicate and sensitive and made of divine materials, we find our meaning and our purpose. Bathed in such a vast belonging, we move about with care, not only for ourselves, but for every filigreed corner of our intricately woven existence. And this precious web, both beautiful and treacherous, needs our attention and our nurture. Most of all, it needs small acts of kindness. And now we light our chalice, which is lit everywhere Unitarians gather in prayer. We breathe in the warmth of this light, its glow filling the spaces where fear and doubt reside. We breathe out the tension we carry. We release what no longer serves us. We breathe in the strength of our community, a sanctuary of diverse voices and shared purpose. We breathe out the urge to go it alone. We embrace the power of togetherness. We breathe in the courage to speak truth, even when it trembles on our lips. We breathe out the silence that holds us back. And we make space for honesty and justice. We breathe in the hope of transformation, knowing we are here to build and to heal. We breathe out despair, trusting that change is born in small acts of love. And as we light this chalice, may each breath remind us of the sacred rhythm of life, the pulse of creation, and the power we hold to shape the world around us. Now let us sing number 66, When the Summer Sun is Shining. Now, Alison is going to read our first reading.
Most people would know Paul Robeson, the great African-American singer, from his iconic rendition of Old Man River from the musical Showboat. But he was much more than just a singer. He was a superb athlete, and while at Rutgers University, he was their first black football player, and he also made the All-American team twice. He earned a law degree at Columbia University, and although he was hired by a white law firm, he never got to practice there due to the racism of the time. He embarked on a successful singing and acting career, which took him all over the world, where he performed benefits for causes of social justice. His politics were very much of the left, which drew the attention of the authorities of the time, and he was considered a major threat to American democracy. This led to his passport being confiscated and revoked in 1950 during the McCarthy era. In 1952, he was invited to speak at a rally in British Columbia, Canada, by the Mine, Mill and Smelters Union. And despite not needing a passport to travel from the USA to Canada, he was prevented from crossing the border. In response, a concert was organized for him to perform at the Peace Arch on the international border between the USA and Canada. And so on this day, the 18th of May in 1952, Paul Robeson sang from the bed of a truck parked next to the Peace Arch between Blaine in Washington State, USA, and Surrey in British Columbia, Canada, to 35,000 people who gathered on both sides of the border to hear him sing. He was truly a voice without borders. The American poet Naomi Shihab Nye was born in that year, in 1952. Her poem, Cross That Line, commemorates that day, the 18th of May, 1952. I'm going to read her poem, Cross That Line, by Naomi Shihab Nye. Paul Robeson stood on the border, the northern border of the USA, and sang into Canada, where a vast audience sat on folding chairs, waiting to hear him. He sang into Canada. His voice left the USA when his body was not allowed to cross that line. Remind us again, brave friend, what countries may we sing into? What lines should we all be crossing? What songs travel toward us from far away to deepen our days? I'd just like to say at the end of that this week another great voice, rock voice, Bruce Springsteen, at his concert this week in Manchester, spoke to his audience about what he perceived is happening in his country, and it didn't go down well in a certain White House, and he was vilified for his remarks. So there are voices out there still singing to us, and we can sing back to them.
Thank you, Alison. So continuing our theme, our children and young people's story this morning is called The Desert Willow. In the vast desert stands the beautiful desert willow, a tree with pink flowers that provides shelter to many, many creatures. In this case, two parrots named Priscilla and Percy, a colony of ants, a hive of bees led by Queen Sophia, and several hairy spiders. They all live peacefully beneath the tree's shade until one scorching day when a fierce sandstorm sweeps in and drops three unexpected guests, a snake, a pig, and a rat. So angry and disoriented, the new arrivals begin to argue about who is to blame for getting caught in the storm. So eventually their bickering stops when Pig declares, I'm hungry. They soon hear buzzing and realize, oh, where there are bees, there must be honey. So the greedy trio begins plotting to steal the honey. Frightened, the bees rush to Queen Sophia for help. She consults the other animals, but no one has a clear solution. Together, they discuss their abilities. Ants are small but strong. Spiders spin webs, and the parrots can mimic voices. So this sparks an idea in Queen Sophia. As the intruders build a clumsy tower of pig, snake, and rat to reach the hive, the ants cleverly lift pig away from the tree, causing the stack to collapse. Excellent. So the animals try again, but the ants repeat their trick. On the third attempt, the exhausted ants can't stop them anymore. However, the parrots spring into action, mimicking the voices of the others to confuse Pig and make him fall. Then Snake is tricked by Percy into crawling into an impassable web, and he tumbles down too. But Rat, determined to steal the honey for himself, climbs towards the hive. But Queen Sophia begins to sing. The bees create a dazzling, hypnotic pattern, lulling Rat to sleep. So he falls from the tree and lands in a heap with the others. Now angry, the bees swarm and chase the invaders far from the willow. Peace returns to the desert tree. The animals cheer, and Queen Sophia reminds them that while they may be small, they are powerful when they work together. So the moral of the story, I'm sure you've worked it out. Everyone has unique strengths, no matter how small they may seem. And by working together, sharing our gifts, we can overcome even the biggest challenges and protect what we care about, the desert willow. So with that in mind, let us sing number 129, Let Love Continue Long. I'm going to read from Luke's Gospel, chapter 6. But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to give them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to anyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Our meditation this morning is a guided meditation, which will focus on your breath, after which we will sit in silence, and then Josh will play a beautiful piece of music by Satie. So let us prepare. Let us sit with our backs straight, the soles of your feet touching the floor. Feel the points of contact between your buttocks and the seat, Imagine an invisible thread running up from your spine to the sky, holding us in place, vertebrae by vertebrae. We're mountains, and the mountain will sit strong despite the weather that's going on. Take a moment to notice what is going on with you right now. Whatever thoughts may be taking your attention, whatever feelings or emotions, are there any sensations in your body? What is the weather pattern inside you right now? Continue being open to these questions just for a few moments. Let us breathe in through the nose, feeling our chests rise and our bellies fill up with air. Breathing out, we feel our chests fall and the air leaving us. And if we notice any thought arising, just say, thinking. And gently bring our attention back to the breath. The breath. If we feel any feelings like anxiety or content, worry, or any sensations in our body, just say, feeling, thinking, feeling. Then kindly bring our attention back to the breath. While it's very quiet, we will notice sounds around us. We're just being aware. Bring our focus back to breathing in and breathing out. Now let us expand our sense of awareness, breathing into every cell in our body. If we have any thoughts or feelings, remember to say thinking or feeling, then come back to the breath. And as our music begins, remember to focus on your breath, in and out, thinking, feeling, and soften any tension in your body. Now you can open your eyes, maybe stretch, have a relax, and then relax. And perhaps take a smile. Take a smile. This morning, I'd like to talk about social action. I believe it's a key Christian calling or a human vocation. I'll talk about some examples from our own Unitarian history. And in particular, I'll talk about far-right messaging and how we might counter those. It's an issue, I believe, that is not far from your minds, my mind, our collective minds, as we watch what is happening in our world. But first, a question for you. How do your beliefs, your convictions, even your theology, inform your understanding of justice, of social justice, perhaps social action? First, I want to just reflect on our reading, my reading this morning, our gospel reading. Say a few words about that. Do unto others as you would have them do to you, also known as the Golden Rule. It was the first century rabbi Hillel who said, this phrase was the paramount command of God. Everything else, he said, is commentary. But that command doesn't have to come from God. I believe that is part of the human calling. But Jesus also said this. And then he added a whole list of very difficult behaviors we should adopt. I think this is a most difficult set of teachings of Jesus. And I am challenged here. I'm not sure about you. And Jesus here is not talking to one person. He is speaking to a group of people. He is talking about relationships. And when we look at the world and see so many enemies of the good, what are we to do? What is called the New Testament was originally written in Greek. Wycliffe's Bible in the 14th century is generally accepted as the first English translation, and it was based on the Catholic Church's version, which was in the Latin Vulgate, that is the Latin spoken by the people. And Tyndale's translation came in the mid-16th century, that would have been the second. Now, he based his translation on the Greek. And I'm going somewhere with this. The word that is translated as love in the passage we just read is the Greek word agape. There are several words in Greek that we translate as love. Philia is deep friendship. Eros is romantic or passionate loving. Storge refers to the affection between parents and children. Agape is an attitude of positive regard towards other people by which I wish for their well-being. Agape is the love that is said to come from God, a holy and sacred thing. Agape spurs us towards doing good. It brings with it empathy, compassion, and fully lived, it requires our resilience. And resilience, of course, is knowing that we will come across some big and small troubles, we will suffer disappointment, setbacks, tragedy. Resilience is about understanding that, accepting that, and learning how to navigate it with grace and with strength. And I'm sure everyone here has had to learn resilience, gained through adversity and pain, deep disappointment, and often feelings of hopelessness. Jesus in this passage is talking about relationships and how we might relate to each other, those we consider enemies, those we consider sinners, those who are our friends. people. We don't do it alone. We cannot do it alone. We need each other. We need community, a beloved community. We all seek an abundant and meaningful life, every one of us. I understand this as salvation. And agape love, with a healthy dose of empathy, compassion, and resilience, helps us understand what hurts and what helps. God tells us that we are loved, we are enough, and we must share our goodness and our gifts only when we can. And in the beloved community, we share with one another honestly our brokenness and what makes us whole, so that the place I inhabit doesn't feel like I am under the wrong piece of sky. We often begin our services here with the words, "Love is the doctrine of this church." And we love not to earn a place in the life hereafter, but because love is what nourishes the soul. It is salvation, and salvation means health and wholeness. It is agape, striving to live in right relationships with all, sinners and saints alike. And in our gospel passage today, Jesus was speaking to everyone, not just those who thought themselves as righteous, or not just those who thought themselves as sinners. You could argue with me on this one, but I think every authentic religious tradition has social campaigning and action as a key part of their mission, and Unitarians are no different. In fact, our Good Samaritan window down there is a common fixture in Unitarian chapels and churches. And that story is a call to love, to help everyone, particularly those in need, regardless of their background or perceived status, to practice agape. But also notice that the story of the Good Samaritan is about a pattern of abuse, insult upon injury. The man was beaten and robbed and subsequently walked over, ignored by seemingly righteous men. Yes, men. It took a Samaritan, the last person you'd expect, to care for him. Because Jesus told the story of a Samaritan. Samaritans were a hated Jewish minority. They were considered outcasts. They were considered unclean. This was the hero of that story. And I think our society is full of Samaritans. But social action within our own congregation has a long history. From our own Margaret Huxley and James Houghton, Theodore Parker, and later in life, Mr. Channing, to our own Unitarian Community Support Group. Now, Margaret Huxley was a pioneer in the education of nurses and the raising of nursing standards. She was president of the Irish Nurses Association. But she was the driving force behind efforts of church members here to relieve a housing crisis in Dublin. The Margaret Huxley Public Utility Society constructed family homes on Cork Street, which is named Huxley Crescent in her honour. The Margaret Huxley Memorial Window is there. It was gifted to the church by her good friend, the artist Sarah Purser. It is the smaller window beside the Good Samaritan. James Houghton was a social reformer, an anti-slavery campaigner. He was trustee of Strand Street and subsequently here in St. Stephen's Green. He was born in 1817 and was a member and activist in many organizations seeking social improvements for the people of Dublin. He actively promoted social and educational outlets for working people. He was behind the People's Gardens, the Botanic Gardens, and the Mechanics Institute. But he was a prominent anti-slavery campaigner, and he represented Ireland at the World's Anti-Slavery Conventions in London in 1838 and again in 1840. He is buried in Mount Jerome, well worth a visit. It is a very well-kept grave, and it has some plaster animals at his grave representing his work with botanic gardens. Now, he died in 1873, and he knew Frederick Douglass, who was in Dublin in 1845. Writing to William Lord Garrison, Douglass quoted from a speech delivered by Daniel O'Connell. Daniel O'Connell said, "I am the advocate of civil and religious liberty all over the globe and wherever tyranny exists. I am the foe of the tyrant, wherever opposition shows itself. I am the foe of the oppressor, wherever slavery rears its head. I am the enemy of the system, of the institution, call it by what name you will. I am the friend of liberty in every clime, class, color. My sympathy with distress is not confined with the narrow bounds of my own green island. No, it extends to every corner of the earth." Now, Frederick Douglass remarked, he said, "I confess I have never heard one by whom I was more completely captivated than by Mr. O'Connell." And as you know, this idea is echoed by Martin Luther King, who said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." His vision extended beyond simply being physically present at protests or marches. He recognized the power of moral leadership and the ability to mobilize people through words and ideas. He encouraged individuals to make a difference by taking a stand for what they believed in, even if it's from a distance. Now, incidentally, James Houghton hosted Douglass in his home on Eccles Street, and Douglass wrote about how much he enjoyed being with Mr. Houghton. Now, what was common among all of these Unitarians I just spoke about? They all sought to build coalitions. They came together with others who were seeking to bring about social change. Houghton with the anti-slavery organizations and Frederick Douglass, Huxley with the medical profession and this congregation. The Refugee Resettlement Group, and we know the work that they have done. They worked with the Irish Refugee Commission, the Irish government, and with this congregation. Coalitions emerge out of a realization that we all suffer from the injustices apparent in our society, and therefore we must come together with all our diverse needs, talents, and create one voice for change. So how might we today honor that Christian tradition, that Unitarian tradition, that human vocation for social action? I mentioned the Unitarian Refugee Welcome Group. They have done that. And I know that many of you here are engaged in some form of social action, and I want to acknowledge that. The Refugee Welcome Group have a very good template. We choose a campaign we can all get behind. Perhaps we might restart the Justice and Peace Committee that was a working group in this church. The idea is to build alliances with other NGOs who are working on a cause, be part of a coalition of like-minded people and organizations. Our collective voice will, in the words of Martin Luther King, bend the arc of the moral universe towards justice. I briefly want to talk about a key issue facing our society, which is the strength of far-right narratives. But not just the strength of far-right narratives, the violence that it inspires. And I want to talk about one organization in Ireland that is doing some work, the Hope and Courage Collective. Their key mission is to enable communities to counter far-right narratives. whether that's against sex education in schools, the LGBTIQ plus community, migrants, refugees, or asylum seekers. They work with local community groups all up and down the country. For example, those who wish to say yes to welcoming strangers to their community. Two examples are Coolock for All, Ballyfermot for All, Castlebar, Claremorris for All, etc. They assist groups in making public statements to counter far-right messaging, and you know what those messages sound like. Ireland is full. Using dangerous combinations of words such as unvetted, military, aged, men. The Vice President of the United States recently said that your compassion belongs first and foremost to your fellow citizens, and only then, after that, you can think about others. And he said this as a faithful Roman Catholic, as a Christian. The new Pope, when he was a simple cardinal bishop, tweeted, J.D. Vance is wrong. It's a reference to today's gospel reading. Because we cannot keep the container of who belongs in our community small and inward-looking, the Hope and Courage Collective would encourage us not to spend our energy correcting or arguing with the opposition. Focus, they say, on your positive message. Focus on messages that amplify your vision and your values. First, they suggest that the community from which the message is coming from define itself. Then amplify the positive, what is good about our community. And thirdly, say what is needed to address the issues already in that community. And if there are serious issues in the community, like inequality or lack of services, name them, offer solutions, and point out whose responsibility it is to fix that problem. Shift the conversation towards solutions. Don't use terms used by the far right, because using their words only amplifies their narrative. We acknowledge there is anger and fear in communities, but let us channel those emotions towards concrete, constructive, and positive action. This is really important. Let us not cancel people by calling them out. Rather, let us call them in. We may not convince everyone, but we can convince most people when we speak truthfully and assertively. But this is how challenging it is. And I'm going to demonstrate that with some words from Dr. Michael Ryan, the Executive Director of the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Program. And he delivered these remarks on the 1st of May. "We are starving the children of Gaza," he said. "If we don't do something about it, we are complicit with what is happening before our very eyes. We are causing this, you and us and everyone who does nothing about it. It's horrific. The children of Gaza should not have to pay the price, as all children have done in the past, for the sins of anyone around them. This just has to stop. Any right-thinking human being must stand up. As a doctor, as a physician, as someone watching more than 1,000 children without limbs, thousands of children with spinal cord injuries and severe head injuries from which they'll never recover, thousands and thousands of children with severe psychological distress that they may never recover from. We are watching this unfold before our very eyes, and we're not doing anything about it. As a physician, I'm angry. I'm angry with myself that I am not doing enough. I'm angry with everyone here," he said. "I'm angry with you. I'm angry at the world. This should not be happening. It cannot continue. It has to stop. This is an abomination." We have to ask ourselves the question, how much blood is enough to satisfy whatever the political objectives are of any regime. And Michael Ryan here is sounding helpless, angry, powerless, despite his platform, despite his influence, and despite his privilege. Finally, these words I found recently, and I'm sorry, I don't know who said them. Living a life that matters doesn't happen by accident. It's not a matter of circumstance, but of choice. So choose a life that matters. Our sympathy with distress need not be confined within the narrow bounds of our own green island. No, it can extend itself to every corner of the earth. Amen. Now our third hymn is number 169, We Shall Overcome. And thank you to everyone for your offerings. Our notices. So please join us for coffee and tea downstairs after the service, where you can also buy wonderful plants. All money raised will go towards Christian aid. Our open pulpit remains open, and we ask people to volunteer to lead services over the coming months. And currently we have the 6th of July and the 20th of July. So if those dates suit you and you'd like to lead a service or part of the service, please have a chat with me afterwards. Thank you. Now Pam leads our weekly service of reflection and meditation here in the church from 1.05 p.m. to 1.35 p.m. and it's followed by a chat and tea at the back of the church. You can also access these sessions on our webcam. Now, this month, the book club is reading When Things Come to Light by our own Liz McManus. And the book club's next meeting is on Wednesday, the 28th of May in the vestry. And please talk to Alison for more details. And a list of the books for the rest of the year is in Uskilt. You can have a look there. The next Unitarian walk will be a loop walk from Blessington to Rusborough House. And it's going to take place on Saturday, the 31st of May. We'll meet at 10:30 a.m. at Avon Activity Centre. The walk is going to take about 4 hours, and more details then will appear in your weekly email from Eileen. And now I'm going to invite Shari to talk to us about Sundays at 2 p.m., a new initiative.
Next Sunday afternoon marks the launch of a new venture, a new partnership between the church and the Classical Musicians Network. Some of you will know the Classical Musicians Network is a network of amateur musicians who meet here and in people's homes once a month. And next Sunday, we're launching our first concert series. We're calling this Sundays at 2, and members of the Classical Musicians Network will give a free concert. All proceeds or donations will go to the Church Restoration Fund. And the concerts will last about 50 minutes. So we hope you'll support this venture. It's a great opportunity to hear some very fine musicians. Our first performer is Cesar Oransky. He's on clarinet with pianist Liesl Maret Jacobs. And some of you will have heard Cesar at Culture Night here. He's a fabulous clarinet player, a dazzling technique, and it will be a real treat. So I encourage you to go get lunch and then come back next Sunday at 2 o'clock to have a treat for yourselves and some musical confections.
They indeed are fine musicians, and the concert is only 50 minutes. Now let us sing our final hymn this morning, hymn number 118, This Little Light. Let us pray. Spirit of life, help us to be present with all that is our life, both our deepest sorrows and our greatest joys, so that we can truly live, engaging fully in our own life and in our community. Spirit of community, help us to know how linked we are, how each one of our cares touches us all. Help us to ask support when we are in need, and to offer our support to others when we are able, so that we may rest in the solace of one another's love. Spirit of love, help us to love our neighbor as we love ourselves, so that we might fully embody love and resist hatred. Spirit of resistance, help us to stick up for what is right, even when we are tired or afraid. Help us to dream of the world as it should be and act to bring that world about. Help us to find hope each day. And Spirit of Hope, help us through this day and each day. Help us to be present for all that is our life. For all this we pray, Amen.